On one hand, you have these quantum experiments now at scales where satellites operate, where general relativity kicks in. And on the other hand, we have these quantum relativistic effects occurring at super small scales, we say should be described by quantum mechanics. So this distinction between the small quantum mechanics and the big general relativity experiment has told us this is not the case anymore.
Is looking at the universe from the small scale and the large always going to be incompatible? James, would you like to kick us off?
Thank you. I'd like to begin by asking, or really distinguishing different notions of scale. And in particular, I would distinguish spatial scale and energy scale, because in physics up until maybe the 20th century, and in lots of physics, those two things go together. The higher energy reveals the smaller length scale. But with general relativity, it's the other way around. The general relativity is a theory of very large scale in terms of length scale, but it's also a theory of very high energy. And so when we ask about a more fundamental theory, we might mean a theory that holds at a higher energy scale, or we might mean a theory that holds at all length scales, but those two things aren't necessarily the same thing. The other thing I would say is that the distinction between the one and the many is actually how we understand things. You know, we think of things as a one, but we understand them better when we break them into their parts and consider them no longer as just a one, but as the product of interactions among the many. So I don't see an incompatibility between the one and the many. And when it comes to scale, I think we need to clarify what we're trying to do, whether we want a theory that holds at high energy, or whether we think that somehow length scale is really the most fundamental scale in physics, and we want a theory that holds at all length scales. I'm not sure those are the same thing. I'd be interested to hear what the others think.
Right. Sabine, what do you think of this opening question James from Mark there? Is there a tension between them, and if so, can it be resolved?
Okay, so he just pretty much said what I was about to say, so I have to turn on thinking mode. maybe let me add a few words to this. So we can use telescopes to watch across very large distances to look back into the early universe. But in the early universe, matter was much more densely concentrated, which brings us to higher energies. So these two things naturally fit together. So I find the question a little oddly phrased. Like, if you say, like, do the large distances and the small distances disagree with each other, we actually use them both together necessarily. So maybe let me instead illustrate where the problem actually comes from. I think it's fairly easy to see if you think about what you know about quantum physics. If we have a particle that goes through a double slit, we often say this particle is in two places at once. So typically that could be an electron, for example. Mm. And we know that these electrons have mass, so they must have a gravitational field. But we don't know what happens with the gravitational field, because in Einstein's theory, the gravitational field doesn't have quantum properties. It can't be in two places at once. So this is why we say we don't know how to put these things together, like a theory for space and time. We do have one. That's Einstein's theory. And then we do have a theory for the quantum particles, but they don't like to cooperate. And this is the problem. So, and we're still trying to figure out how to combine these two things. And there are two very important areas where that becomes relevant. One is the beginning of the universe. Like, if we go back in time to times even earlier than what we can look at right now, then at some point the quantum properties of space and time themselves should become important, and we don't have the maths for this, so we just don't know what to do. And the other situation is what's going on inside black holes. No one really thinks that there actually is a singularity. It's probably something else, but then what? And then, of course, there's this issue with the double slit, which we really want to figure out.
Okay. In fact, I want your thoughts on some of the things Sabine's just raised in a moment. But first of all, on this fundamental question, you do lots of work on trying to resolve this tension between the one and the many, as it were, or general relativity and quantum mechanics.
Yes. I mean, always being the last is kind of interesting because you're like, oh, I hope they don't say what. So we're going to find something in which we agree, but I think something we disagree comes after. But let me just put what they've seen in my own words. So I think that when we're talking about, or we have in mind that the small applies to when quantum mechanics, we're thinking about the physics of the microscopic world. And then usually, you know, you learn in university that general relativity applies to like the large scales. This is wrong. And I want to explain why in a moment. But anyway, quantum mechanics is incomplete or wrong or has its problems. We know there's a measurement problem. We don't know what the wave function is. General relativity cannot predict what we observe in the universe. And that's why we need to introduce the notion of dark matter or the acceleration of the universe. And we need dark energy. But let's put these problems aside and let's talk just about scales. Anton Seilinger can take photons and prepare them in superpositions, two photons in an entangled state. And he can entangle states across thousands of kilometers. So he does that now with satellite-based quantum technologies. Then when you go to general relativity, well, the proper time on Earth is different from the proper time on a satellite. That's because of the mass of the Earth. So the space-time is curved. And we need to make corrections due to that to actually have our GPS having the accuracy that it has. But quantum clocks are so precise that you can now see this time dilation at very small scales. So the first one to do the experiment was Dave Wineland, that he could see these effects in 33 centimeters. But the latest papers claim to see time dilation in the millimeter scale. So look how beautiful this is. On one hand, you have these quantum experiments now at scales where satellites operate, where general relativity kicks in. And on the other hand, we have these quantum relativistic effects occurring at super small scales where the physics is, we say, should be described by quantum mechanics. So this is another way of putting what James and Sabine said. This distinction between the small quantum mechanics and the big general relativity experiment has told us this is not the case anymore. Now, what I thought the question was about was more like, can we unify general relativity and quantum mechanics? And I think we can. I think perhaps we need these experiments, this type of experiments to guide our theories. I think we also need to modify them both. Both have problems. So like in any marriage, both have to change a little bit in order to understand each other. And I also think we need some new ideas, so some creativity. But even if we manage to unify them, I don't think that has, it's not even close to the one with capital letters, right? I think we probably will be able with a new theory to develop new instruments and make new experiments. And I think it's very likely we again find something we can't explain and we're back to a square one. So although we approach understanding better, I don't think we can actually get to understanding, let's say, the one.
Okay, that's great. Philosophy, James, is full of these like big picture views of the world, of thinking about what the one is, right? We mentioned some of the ancient Greeks in the introduction, thinking Thales, thinking that water is the fundamental stuff, or Heraclitus, fire. Parmenides denying there is a, you know, it's just one big sort of block. And the philosophers of mind thinking that maybe it's consciousness is the thing at the fundamental reality. What would you say to somebody who thinks that the world or existence as a whole, it is sort of brought together under one thing, brought together as a one fundamental reality with a capital O, as we heard there?
I suppose I'd wonder, yeah, and so what? I guess I'm interested in what we can do to make progress in understanding the world. And if you were to say, right, I've understood the world, it's a thing, there's this thing that is everything. All right, and then someone else says, yeah, no, it isn't, there's not one thing that's everything, there's just lots of little things. What hangs on that distinction? I mean, is it just words? I'm not sure. I think it's pretty unhelpful to think of reality in its totality as a thing. Mm. Because you can't do anything with that. In order to make progress conceptually or scientifically, you've got to think about differentiated things. So you have to think about more than one thing. So I find it, yeah, sort of, I suppose it's sort of irrelevant, maybe.
Just a point of clarification, though, that your opening remark there seemed to suggest that a theory needs some kind of implication beyond, you know, the knowledge in itself, right? So it needs to, you go, so the heart or the fundamental reality is like this, and you go, so what? What implication does that have?
Right.
Is that something it needs to have?
It doesn't need to. I mean, if that's whatever floats your boat. I mean, if you just like thinking of reality and naming it and calling it a thing, all right. I mean, but I think if you're interested in science, then you want a bit more. And I don't think it's particularly helpful for science for us to think that any of our science is describing the whole of reality. I mean, an important point here is like the universe in cosmology.
Hmm.
Like the universe in metaphysics would mean everything there is. But the universe in cosmology is the large scale structure of everything that there is. It's not everything that there is. It's everything that there is looked at in respect of its large scale structure.
Yeah.
And that's not the same thing as everything there is. It's not including the small scale structure. So we should be quite careful, I think, not to conflate the sort of metaphysical meaning of the universe.
Yeah.
With the thing that's studied in cosmology, when people say, you know, the Friedman Robertson Walker model is a model of the universe, they mean it's a model of the universe at large length scales and in respect of its coarse grain properties.
Okay. Yvette, are you one of these people who like to, you know, think of the world as one big thing, as a big unified thing? Is that something that floats your boat?
Yes, I think that, let me call it the one, just to make a distinction from the universe. I think the one is fundamental. So I think, the universe, if you want to call it like that again, is one. But, we're limited. So we live just some number of years and we're like physically, you know, have a limited volume. Our senses, our ears, our eyes are limited. We know we only see a little frequency, like window, in the electromagnetic spectrum. Our theories are limited. Our intelligence is limited. Even AI's intelligence, thank God, is limited. So we're limited in every possible way. So what I think is that from this limited, position, what we look at the one looks like this multiplicity. That's what I take the hat. Actually, I should have put my hat on before because this is my physics hat. So when I know what I'm talking about and I'm certain and I'm confident, I put it on. And then when I'm not really sure what I'm talking about, I take it off. So that last thing was okay to have it without the, without the hat. So, I think that yes, with our theories, and like I said, I do believe we're going to be able to unify quantum mechanics and general relativity eventually, but even if we unify it, I don't think that is going to give us an explanation, for example, of what consciousness is. So I disagree with Roger Penrose on that, or what life is. And I think we can get better theories and approach that one thing, but I don't actually think we can ever grasp it, because we're always going to be looking at it from a limited point of view. But I think that that's in a way also very beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Sabina, where do you sit in between these two opposites, the one and the not one?
So is the universe made of one thing, or is it made of many things? On the risk of sounding a little bit like Jordan Peterson, depends on what you mean by thing. It depends on what you mean by meaning, depends on what you mean by you. So where am I getting with this? If you could say, for example, space is one thing, or you could say space is infinitely many points, so then it's many things. So I think that this distinction isn't particularly helpful. Let me instead tell you something about how physicists have tried to unify the space-time and the particle picture, which kind of stands in the way of treating both on equal footage. They're basically two great ideas, regions of thought, you could say. So one is to say everything is kind of geometrical, and I will put string theory into this side, where it's all about what the strings do and how they interact. But there are related ideas where basically particles are a type of geometry. They're like a feature of space. This is an idea, interestingly enough, that Einstein already pursued. He originally thought that black holes, when one had just discovered the solutions that describe them, would be something like elementary particles. So this didn't really pan out, but then later John Wheeler pursued the ideas, and he had some geons, I think he called them, some deformations of space-time that he thought could describe particles. And that was abandoned for no really good reason, for all I know, like in the 1960s or something. So we have on this one side, we have particles are actually a feature of the geometry. So the one is the geometry. And then on the other side, we have people who say, actually, the only thing that really exists are particles, and space emerges from the relations between the particles. So basically, space is the thing that we need to make sense of to describe the interactions between the particles. And this is often called a relational approach. So these are the two big schools of thought to try to approach this idea of everything being one.
James, do you want to come back on Yvette's points from...
Well, there's something actually that I wanted to mention coming up right from the beginning, which is a particle and the idea that particles are fundamental, because it's not really my understanding of how the physics works, that there's the quantum field of one kind or another, and there are certain states of the field that amount to a definite particle number, but there are lots of other states of the field that don't. And so I think already with particles, we're hiding a lot with that word, and we feel like we understand what we're talking about because we say particle and everyone knows what a particle is. But when you're using it to talk about the particles of high energy physics, that everyday meaning of the word is not really in operation, and the states of the field that we can describe as being a particular number of particles in a particular state are special states. They're not generic states, and the generic states of the field aren't definite in particle number. So I don't really see how we can think of particles as fundamental.
I'm trying to understand this. It seems to be like you're saying that it's something like they're contextual, like that depends on their relations to other things. It's not like a particle is a static thing with an essence of itself.
Well, there is that, but it's a more specific claim, right? So if we were to talk about light and someone would say, oh, I'm sitting here and the photons are all streaming from the light. This is all right for a very crude level of popularization, but it's not scientifically accurate at all, because that's suggesting that light can be broken down into photons, but the generic state of the light is not a definite photon state. A state of light in which there's a specific number of photons in a particular state is very special. It's not general. So we can't think of light as made of photons, is what I'm saying. And more generally, I think we can't think of everything being made of particles in a metaphysical sense. I mean, yeah, we can talk about the ways in which we can decompose things into particles and what that means concretely. But to say it just is a set of particles, I think, is wrong, because particles are not as fundamental as the field. I mean, there's another thing there about the one and the many, which is about how, you know, you look very closely, even when you do have a definite particle and you see this swarm of virtual particles. So you say, right, that's a proton or that's an electron, and yet very close to it at very short timescales, there are all these, every other kind of particle is there virtually.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't really have a one that's separate from the many there, do you? And then the other thing I was just going to ask is about, when we talk about unifying quantum mechanics and general relativity, there's two things that we could mean. We could mean making a quantum theory of gravity, or we could mean making quantum theory of gravity, which at the same time is a unified theory of all the forces.
Yeah.
And those are different. So some people in quantum gravity, all they're trying to do is have a quantum theory of gravity, whereas the string theory program is more like, when we get this quantum theory of gravity, it will be at the same time a theory that's also of all the other forces as well.
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below.
With a free trial, you can enjoy the full talk and thousands more.
Thank you for being part of the conversation.